IVM.
Welcome to the Equity Sahi podcast with Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. This podcast will delve into the investment insights and philosophies of Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company and speak about the frameworks used by them to assess various sectors for investment. Folks, welcome to the show. My guest today is Shreya Lunkar, Senior VP and Fund Manager PMS at Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. And the topic for today's episode is India's automobile sector. Shreya, welcome to the show. We've had such a good journey so far. You've helped our listeners in understanding complex sectors like banking, life insurance, general insurance. Today's topic, I believe, is even more interesting. It involves one of those sectors which I think touches all our lives. It's also a very big contributor to the economy in terms of GDP or in terms of employment. That's the automobile sector, right? And I want to talk about the automobile sector, specifically the consumer-facing part. Okay? I know the automobile sector is massive. It's diverse. In fact, there's a part of it that's even going to grow even more in the future, the electric vehicle sector. But for the purposes of this episode, let's just stick to the consumer-facing part, which is essentially four-wheelers or what we call passenger cars and two-wheelers. Okay, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Anupam. So, as you said rightly, auto is a very significant sector for any economy, not just India. And the prominence will keep on growing because somewhere this is a sector which is made up of two wants. One, a person who needs a four-wheeler or a two-wheeler. And the second is a person who wants a two-wheeler and a four-wheeler. By that I mean is for someone it's important for his income generating activity to either have a car or a two-wheeler. Whereas for someone else, it's more of an aspirational want. As he grows his income curve, he wants to invest in a car and move around in a car. That's how this sector is very interesting and it's very nuanced as a result because it is a mixture of a want and a need. And that's why probably, you know, when we look at the auto sector, it's very important when we think about evolution of an auto sector. It's important to look at what has happened in the last 15 years. And generally, one of the most important vectors that drives auto sector globally is the prosperity in the economy, and which is measured by GDP per capita. So if we look at the last 15 years, our India's GDP per capita has grown at about 7% CAGR. Versus this, the passenger cars, which is the four-wheelers, that sector has compounded at almost 9%.
In volumes or in revenue?
In volumes.
In volumes, okay.
So in value, it'll be much more.
Much more, obviously, yeah.
So in volumes itself, it has done more than the GDP per capita growth. And that is exactly what happens because as you keep growing up the value curve, there comes an inflection point after which your discretionary spend grows up far more in proportion than your rise in your income levels because you have more income to spend on your discretionary spends.
And I'm sure this is not unique to India. I mean, all the emerging economies, Brazil, South Korea, or even what we know as a developed countries, the US, Japan, all of them have gone through the same phase, right?
Absolutely. So actually, to think of it, we are the closest to China, right? And China's last 15 years, the GDP per capita has grown at 10%, but the auto sector has grown at 15%.
Wow.
So it's almost 1.5 times the growth in GDP per capita. Mm. And we are still way below that threshold.
Yeah.
But so what the way to simply think about it is that if we look at the last 15 years, our GDP per capita has grown at 7%. With what is happening in this economy, we are moving faster on the growth path progressively over the last 15 years. Our speed of growth has kept on increasing gradually. And that's why there is a good reason to believe in the next 15 years, our growth rate in per GDP per capita will be even higher than 7%.
Yeah.
And the moment that happens, then a multiplier of what China is showing can easily be thrown at India as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when your growth will go.
Yeah, the inflection point that you speak of is really interesting, right? Because a lot of us have seen this. I get that half of India's population is less than 35 years old. So people don't even remember how things were before 1991. There was just the Ambassador car and the Fiat, just two or three models. And then everything just blew up, right? Honda, Hyundai, all of them came in the 90s. So that inflection point that you speak of, when the GDP per capita reaches that inflection point, I'm sure all of us, you know, over our careers of 25, 30 years would be buying at least two or three cars.
Yes.
We would like to move up. You know, I have a Wagoneer. I want to probably move up to a Baleno or to a Shias. So all of that, that's all part of this auto sector.
Yes, absolutely. But however, everything is not hunky-dory. So when you look at 15 years, it gives you a very, very sound idea of what the sector has done and what potential it has. But however, we need to bear in mind this is a cyclical sector. Because as I said, for some people, it is discretionary. As the economy slows down, this velocity also slows down. So just to put a case in point, when we talk about 15 years, let's take the time horizon a little bit shorter and let's look at the last 5 years. If you look at the last 5 years, the GDP per capita has actually grown at 6%.
Mm.
And so has the volumes. So
at the same level.
At the same level.
Wow.
Now, this is a very interesting economy nuance that, and this happens across. It happens during earning multipliers. It happens during credit multipliers. It happens with velocity of discretionary spend, that up to a particular threshold of income growth, we behave very differently when it comes to everything. But the moment the growth level threshold raises its bar, the consumption pattern changes geometrically.
Wow. Okay.
That means to say that, say, if we are growing at 6%, the volumes are also growing at 6%. However, if we grow at 10%, our volumes will actually grow at 15%.
Wow.
Because there is a geometric progression that happens when you go up that curve threshold. And so when we talk about the last 5 years, which has been not so great and which is reflected by this multiplier that your GDP per capita grew at 6%, so did the volumes. There are a couple of reasons for that. One was economy has never seen a slowdown as long as this phase, which has lasted for almost 10 years. The corporate profitability of the Nifty 500, the top 500 companies in India, has actually halved in the last 10 years. It used to be 5.5% of the GDP. Today it is 2.3% or 2.8% of the GDP.
Mm.
Also in this phase, we were also faced with high interest rates, which also makes an impediment because most of the people buy cars on loans.
What are the numbers out there? 70-80%?
So almost 80-80% of the cars are bought on loans. So as interest rates go higher, there are people who push out their consumption and wait for the income levels to catch up and then they consume. The third is, which is more interesting and very specific to India, is what happens is that because our top 10 cities, like in every country, the Pareto works. Even in our country, the top Pareto captures fair share of the sales. Although there's no official estimate out there, but it would be anywhere between 30 to 40%. We don't know. With the top 10 cities which contribute to the sales volumes. Now, in the top 10 cities, most of the cities are going through heavy infrastructure development. You talk about metros, you talk about flyovers, you talk about roads. And when this work begins, it creates a heightened congestion in these cities. That also crowds out a person's desire to own a car because your traffic, your jams, your waiting time gets so much longer that you are then better off using a Uber or a Ola rather than owning a car because the roads are congested. But all these infrastructure development will have a logical end at some point, whether it's 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, tough to call. But when it happens, your roads start freeing up again. And then the aspiration which people had to, you know, buy a car as a status symbol of their living, then that aspiration will actually come back to its fore.
Sure.
And people will actually start, the top 10 cities who has the purchasing power, they will start flexing their purchasing power in buying more cars and better cars.
Okay. Can we go into the numbers in terms of where the sector is today? How do you size up the entire opportunity?
So the opportunity remains absolutely abundant. Just to give you a very interesting analogy, it's easy to keep comparing ourselves to China because their population and our population is actually the same. And today China sells 2.5 crore cars and we sell 35 lakh cars.
Wow.
So that China sells 8 times more for the same population that we have today. But however, it's not a fair comparison because China has progressed and has grown far ahead of us. So it's fair to see where China was 15 years ago. So actually, India is where China was 15 years ago. Yeah. So China used to sell 35, 38 lakh cars 15 years ago. And what is but remarkable about this feature is that at that point of time, China was 50% poorer than us.
Oh.
And still they used to sell 35 lakh cars. And India today is technically 50% richer than China at that point of time. But we sell still less cars.
Yeah.
To start with, there's a gap which is just apparent right there. And it will even startle you even more if I tell you that in the last 15 years, China volumes have grown at 15%.
Wow.
Even though the velocity, even though they were purchasing more cars for their affordability back then, they have still compounded at 15% for the last 15 years. So this just gives you a very easy, very simple way of looking at it, that what lies ahead of you. If all falls in place, if everything falls in place, then we can easily grow far higher than that.
Okay.
The second most obvious way of looking at it is the typical penetration numbers.
Yep.
So when you think about cars, you have to think at a household level, because in a family, at best, you will have one, two or three or four cars.
Yeah.
So it's easy to think about penetration at a household level. In India, about out of every 10 families, only one family has a car.
Mm.
And this gets even more skewed when you go to a rural.
Okay.
In a rural, out of every 10 families, only 0.5 of, you know, one or two will be having a car.
Sure.
So the penetration gap gets accentuated as you go down the rural, because the rural GDP per capita is lower.
Yeah.
And urban GDP per capita is higher. And this is where I explained to you that the multiplier increases as your GDP per capita goes above a particular threshold. And this is what we will see. And interestingly is, all the developed markets, out of every 10 families, every 10 families will have a car.
That's what we call 100% penetration.
That's what we call 100% penetration versus 10% penetration of India.
Yeah.
Even if you look at China, they are at 50% penetration.
Wow.
So there is enough headroom, there is enough leeway, there is enough headroom for us to keep growing, just given the under-penetration is absolutely there.
Sure. Okay, Shreya, so we've understood the penetration gap, right? I mean, it's obviously quite large and there's a big room for growth there. So what does this mean now going forward? How do you size up the opportunity?
As I mentioned, the sizing of the opportunity sometimes becomes very simple and very exuberant at the same time. But, you know, many times it just becomes easier when you look at examples nearby. Let's assume what China is selling today, 2.5 crore cars. In 15 years, they got to that level. Let's assume we take 20 years to get to that level. Far more than China.
From 35 lakhs.
From 35 lakhs. We will still grow at 11% over the next 20 years. 20 years. And this is actually one of those few categories where your base effect can actually not work against you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, generally what happens in most of the categories, if you've grown in the last 15% at 9%, your next 15 years, just by virtue of arithmetic, you want to be growing a little lower.
Yeah.
However, this is one category where I think there is a scope that your next 15 years growth could be actually higher than the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's entirely possible if the infrastructure is supported, given the way the roads are getting built in the last 5-6 years, heightened focus on road building, heightened focus on people flexing their aspiration. So I'm giving you one side of the story, but there are many ways that you can cut the story, cut the penetration, cut the need, understand the real value or the demand that's lying hidden. But you will still come to a number which will be very close to the 10 to 11%. And this will happen over the next 20 years. So just imagine the level of compounding that itself the sector can give you.
But I get that, you know, a car is essentially an ownership item. And we're living in 2019 where across the world, the entire thing about shared mobility is taking a lot of attention. There are a lot of people who now even believe that they don't want to own a car at all. And Uber or, you know, it's like you had said about traffic being so bad that why would anybody want to drive? I'm sure that even for some of the big companies who sell cars, Uber, Ola has been one of the reasons why the growth has gone up. So let's just move towards the risk part. Are there any major changes in terms of, I don't know, maybe the way we are thinking about mobility, maybe in terms of regulation, that you feel could actually put a dent or at least might have a risk on this, what seems to be a fairly certain 11% growth?
Yeah. So that's a good point, Anupam. So shared mobility, it's a recent phenomena. We've just seen it happening in US just about 10 years ago. Uber, in fact, just got listed a couple of weeks ago. But if you really think about it, what is shared mobility? Shared mobility is, earlier I was buying a car for myself. Now somebody is buying a car for many of me. So I'm sharing that same vehicle with someone else. But this feature is far more pronounced globally in the developed markets. And even if that has happened, we haven't seen global volumes decline in a very meaningful way. They have declined, but that could be because of economy reasons also. But they've not declined. So the global volume growth of passenger cars is still at 2%, which is in line with the global GDP growth.
Yeah.
So in some sense, could this be a risk? Answer is yes. But let's face it, even a Uber and a Ola driver needs to buy a car.
Correct. Correct.
So there will be a demand either from a segment of drivers or there will be a demand from a segment of consumers.
Mm.
But the fact is the demand for cars will not go away.
Mm.
However, there is another risk which, given that we are talking on risk, we should be bearing in mind is this sector is going through a lot of technological changes. A lot of investments are going on electrification of mobility, lot of investments on autonomous driving, self-driving, and cars have to become more safer And globally, governments are becoming more and more pollution sensitive, which means that your standards, your cars have to become more and more cleaner. As all of this happens, the cost of owning a car will keep rising far faster than it has in the last 15 years. And that could be the only bummer. So when, although we talk about volumes in the next 15 years, there is enough reason to believe it will be above double digits. However, there is a good chance if the cost inflation of these cars are higher, the affordability will keep getting pushed out. But again, the silver lining there is most of these aspirational demands is never destroyed. It gets pushed out. So if a car becomes very expensive, I'll wait for my 2 year of income growth. And after 2 year, I'll buy a car what I was to buy today. So it generally gets pushed up and bunched up into the future. However, this is a risk which we need to bear in mind when we are thinking over the next 5 years.
Yeah, I would have, you know, assumed that in the last 10-15 years also, India cars, you know, have gone from Bharat stage one, which in fact correspond to the global or the European Euro 1, Euro 2 norms. We've also made a nice progress on that front. And I think it's probably to the credit to the of the manufacturers that they've either absorbed this entire cost of upgradation, because there is a cost to upgrading a car engine from A standard to a higher standard, and still the sales haven't really, you know, moved. Obviously, who knows how this pans out in the future.
Absolutely. And you know, one, today it's very difficult to put a cause and effect, but one fact that would be worthwhile to note is actually if you see the entry segment cars, that segment has actually dropped by 25% over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Absolute volumes. I don't know whether it's because of shared mobility, because now the same population who earlier thought of buying an Maruti Alto or a Swift is now thinking, okay, instead of me buying that, let me be an Uber and Ola. And when my income level rises above a threshold, I will actually buy a better car.
That's crazy. You're saying that entry-level cars have dropped 25%. I mean, at one point of time, I remember early 2000s or, you know, when we had first seen the GDP growth bump happen at that point of time, a car was your announcement of arrival into whatever. You know, you get a job, you get a car. It was so ingrained in us. And small cars used to be 80% of total volumes at that point of time. I mean, there were brands that are iconic from that era, whether it's the Zen, whether it's the Santro, and these were huge names. Okay, these used to sell in large numbers annually. You're saying that entry segment has actually shrunk.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It has shrunk by 25% over the last 7 to 8 years. And still we have grown at 6%. When you see the last 5 years, we've still grown at 6% despite of a very large segment of these cars not growing.
Yeah.
So it's actually remarkable that how premiumization is taking up, because people are buying less,
sure,
but people are buying far better.
I know. Because, you know, even so over the years, even the entry level car has become expensive. If you look at the higher segment, a Swift, for example, or Swift Desire, for example, and these are big selling cars, are obviously much more sturdy, much more bigger than a Zen, or at that point of time, Maruti started with much smaller cars. So that's really interesting. Shreya, fantastic. We've covered four-wheelers, okay? I want to get to two-wheelers now, because two-wheelers by volumes is obviously much larger than four-wheelers. It's also a fundamentally different segment. You know, for example, for a lot of us now, a two-wheeler is a necessity. Like, I've heard of college kids, whenever they grow up, they just ask for it, because you just need it. A two-wheeler is like freedom kind of thing. For some people, it's necessary. It's a mode of income also, you know, if you're a delivery boy or something. It also goes into your wants and needs section. Let's go into two-wheelers now.
So two-wheeler, essentially, if you were to see, is whenever a country is below developed status, two-wheeler is more relevant. The moment you move into a developed status, cars become more relevant, because your GDP per capita, your income levels rise to a level that people start aspiring for cars versus a two-wheeler. And we are still in that journey. And that is why, although we sell 1/8 the car volumes that China sells, but we sell the same volumes of bikes that China sells.
Wow.
So that is the amazing feature of this industry. So if you look at like cars have grown at 9%, so has two-wheelers. The motorcycle and the scooter market has also grown at almost the same volume, the same growth rate over the last 15 years.
Sure.
So in the last 15 years, your two-wheelers and your four-wheelers have grown at the same level. But in the next 15 years, there's a good chance that because of the headroom that four-wheeler offers, it can grow faster than the two-wheelers.
Yeah.
And what is even more unique is today Indians are spending so much more. Today, an entry-level bike may still cost you 40,000 rupees.
Yeah.
People spend that much on mobile phones.
Yeah.
And we buy far more mobile phones.
And change them much more often also.
And we change them much more often. A bike actually lasts for 6, 7, 5 years. And there is a resale value at the end of it also. A phone, there is no resale value. There is very small resale value. But people are spending much more on mobile phones. So it's amazing how consumption pattern for that same category of spend is actually changing. And that is why what is happening. Another feature of two-wheeler which differentiates itself from four-wheeler is that the penetration in the rural side is much higher than the cars.
Okay.
Because it's a product which is meant for largely rural.
Yeah.
And the penetration in urban is very much, pretty much there where it's supposed to be.
Okay.
We are almost 80% penetrated in most of the families in the urban side. So now what is happening is, because of this higher penetration in urban, now it's leading to the way of premiumization.
Right.
Now in the urban, a person is saying, I bought an Entry, I bought a Splendor, I bought a Passion.
Mm.
Now I will buy a Pulsar or I'll buy a Royal Enfield.
Okay.
They are premiumizing their spend because now they have penetrated with the first product.
Right.
So now the product upgrade cycle starts for them. But in the rural, there is still ample scope for this growth to kind of continue.
Sure.
Just one thing when we talk about risk, as we spoke about risk in four-wheeler, although the risk exists, there is one risk of electrification, which is heightened over here.
Mm.
Because as you would have noticed a couple of days ago in the newspaper, government has actually officially announced that their intent is that every new two-wheeler after 2025, they want it to be electric two-wheeler. And this will become a reality because electrifying a two-wheeler is much easier.
Easier, correct.
Than electrifying a car. So this is something that, you know, probably could decide a fate of many companies when you think about two-wheeler in the as a context.
Sure, okay. Shreya, so we've covered four-wheelers, we've covered two-wheelers, we've covered the size of the opportunity, the size of the sector, the way that we buy. How now, you know, now that we're in the final part of the episode, is the main question. How do we choose a great automobile company to invest in? And again, out here we're talking about passenger vehicles and two-wheelers.
You know, the interesting part is if you just think of it very simplistically, again, I'm going to just give you a certain rule books, which probably will help you decide better. The first and foremost important thing is when you're spending, it's a big spend for anybody, buying a car or buying a two-wheeler. So what matters? What matters is two things. I need a good brand so that I can trust my money with that brand. And second, I need a good distribution so that if ever I have a problem with my bike or my car, I can easily find a way to fix it. So a brand, a strong brand and a strong distribution is probably an absolute must. The second thing, because as we mentioned, one of the biggest risks in both the categories is turning out to be the technological advancement that is happening.
Mm.
We will innovate far more in the next 15 years than we ever have in the last 15 years, in specifically in the auto sector.
Sure.
And given that this wave of innovation is coming, you want to invest in a company who has the willingness to invest, an ability to invest, and who has a cost advantage. Because each of this technological advancement will come with a higher cost.
Sure.
And only a manufacturer who already has a strong manufacturing base can make sure that they can manufacture the new technologically advanced products at a low cost of price.
Yeah.
And as a result, become stay relevant for an Indian consumer because we are very value conscious. And lastly, given that the point two of the ability to invest, which emanates from profits. So actually, only those companies who are making money today will actually have that wherewithal to invest for the future. And as a result, a strong profit pool today of a company itself can become a moat itself for these companies. So there are companies today in this sector where they may be having 50% market share, but in the profit pool, they may be having 80% market share.
Wow.
So the remaining players may not be able to even invest half as much as this company or one or two or three of these companies can actually invest to stay ahead of the curve.
And that's because whenever the first company comes out with a new product with a higher technology, the cost might almost be the same or there might be not much of a difference.
Absolutely.
That's because of scale.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And also what is happening is globally, this technology is moving from, you know, we will talk a lot more about hybrid technology. We will talk about a lot more about electrifying vehicles in the next 15 years. And these technologies take a lot of time to build.
Mm.
So you need to also have a way of making sure that you can incubate or you can partner with the people who have these technologies to take benefit of being there at the right time with the right product in front of the customer so they can fulfill an aspiration for him.
Sure. Okay. So I'm just going to recap that for the listeners at how do you choose a good four-wheeler or a two-wheeler company to invest your money in. First, what Shreya said was it should have a strong brand, fantastic distribution. That's always important, because if your car or your bike gets spoiled, you will look out for the first after-sale service point. As the first one. The second is the technology, right? This is going to become more important in the next 10 to 15 years. The company's ability to invest and the cost advantage. Obviously, if you're selling 1 million vehicles, your cost advantage is going to be much more than the guy who's selling 500,000 vehicles, right? And the third is profitability, which itself becomes a moat, because like what Shrey said, for the guy who's selling 1 million, he might have just a 50% share by volumes. But if he has an 80% share of the profit pool, the next guy is just not going to be able to compete with that. And that's a wrap on this episode of the Equity Sahi Hai podcast, brought to you by Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. I'm your host Anubhav Gupta, B50 on Twitter. My guest was Shrey Lunkar, Fund Manager PMS at Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast, do check out other podcasts on the IVM Podcast Network.
India's a massive subcontinent, home to truly stunning diversity. Behind the veils of smoke that obscure our thriving cities, our history is still alive, glimmering like sequins, waiting to be discovered. And if you, like me, are straining to hear the echoes of our past, this podcast is for you. I'm Anirudh Kanisetti, a history and geopolitics researcher, and I host Echoes of India, a history podcast about India, by Indians, and for Indians. In Echoes, we journey through the complex histories of South Asia and what they can teach us about our globalized world. Tune in every Wednesday on ivmpodcast.com or your favorite podcast app.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Screwalam, and you've been listening to my podcast and the multiple chapters of my book, Dream With Your Eyes Open. And I think to that, I've had good chats here. And I think chapter 13, my book, is all about Q&As, and I'm sure there are more Q&As. Happy to answer them. So send them in, and happy to have a dialogue with you on that.
So if you'd like to ask Ronnie a question, send it to us at dreaming@ivmpodcast.com. If selected, we'll read out your question on the last episode and have Ronnie answer it. You can also send a question to us on social media at IVM Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.